Everybody, you're listening to Beyond Reality on BBS Radio. I'm Dr. Shelley Kerr, and today I am so thrilled that I am having an opportunity to talk to one of my favorite authors, Dan Millman. Dan Millman is a former world champion athlete, university coach, martial arts instructor, and college professor. His work includes Journeys of Socrates, which is the one we're going to talk about today. Oh, you're going to love this book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, The Life You Were Born to Live, and many, many others. He's inspired readers in over 29 languages through his books, his keynote lectures, his seminars. And Dan and his wife, Joy, live in Northern California, and he and I will be speaking this weekend at the International Conference on Science and Consciousness at La Fonda Hotel in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Dan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Shelley. Glad to be here live and lively.
Live and lively, yes. This is good. Dan, I love the new book, Journey to Socrates. I could not put it down. I think it's the best book you've ever written, and they're all great, but I love it.
Well, I appreciate that. It took 4 years full-time labor. I went to Russia to do research, went to the monastery island that I write about later in the book, and trained with the special forces in Russia, and just to get a flavor for their warrior kind of mentality, to soak in the atmosphere around Moscow and St. Petersburg. And yes, I think it's certainly my best writing after 25 years doing it, I think in terms of prose and creating a story that people find bit hard to put down. I agree. It's probably my best work, even though each of my books, as you know, is quite different.
Yeah, all your books are wonderful. This book, I was amazed. I mean, every little piece just ties up so beautifully in the end, and I think it's a masterpiece.
Well, thank you so much.
Really, really love it, and I hope everybody goes out and picks up a copy of this book. I was wondering if we could start off just by revisiting all of the things that have gone on in your journey over the last 25 years and just talk a little bit about The Way of the Peaceful Warrior and that story. How did that story come about?
Well, many people just see the product, the final product, not realizing all that went into it in the past. I think it goes back, Shelley, to when I was a young gymnast at University of California, Berkeley. I don't know if it happened in a moment or a day or just over time, but I discovered my calling to be a teacher. Not everybody has that calling. Even though each of us teaches in our own way, our children, we teach others by our example, not everybody formally is called to share in that way of teaching. And I realized one day that no matter how much I improved, only one person benefited. But if I could share what I learned with other people, if I could influence them in some positive way, which I know is part of your motive for being on the radio too, you know, then it made my life more meaningful. So I began to teach what I knew, which was gymnastics. And I was pretty successful at that at Stanford and Berkeley. But one day it also struck me that no matter, you know, what somersaults or cartwheels or acrobatics I could do, that didn't really help me much when I went out on a date. or when I got married or had children or dealt with financial issues or career decisions and all the things we deal with in everyday life. So that's when I started asking bigger questions about life. My interests expanded, my universe expanded. And rather than just focusing on what qualities can we develop that create talent for sports, which I did for years, I started asking what qualities create a kind of talent for living. And that led me to researches, travels around the world, working with different mentors. It wasn't quite that cut and dried, but over time I met many different teachers. And one of the central ones, of course, that I write about is the man I called Socrates, in Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and then his life story in the Journeys of Socrates. And that led me finally to want to share it in a book, and I did it around biographical information, the structure of my life. And as you know, I guess we'll get to it, but as you know, the movie is coming out very soon.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that. Sure. When will the movie be out?
And of course, this is the movie not of Journeys of Socrates, which may be a future movie, but it's a movie based on Way of the Peaceful Warrior. That movie is opening June 2nd on the West Coast, up and down the West Coast, and then it's going to move in different waves across the country to various cities.
Starring Nick Nolte.
Well, as Socrates, yes. We use Nick's name because he's better known than the young man who plays me in the movie named Scott Meklowitz, Great young guy. I was so happy with his casting. He was in a Euro trip, and he was in a movie called Mean Creek, which is an underground classic, too. Scott did a wonderful job, and I think he's going to be a lot better known after this picture comes out.
Oh, definitely. And they can see a clip of the movie by going on your website at danmillman.com or peacefulwarrior.com.
Yeah, whatever people can remember more easily. Danmillman.com or peacefulwarrior.com, and that takes them to my homepage, and then they can look around there if they like, but there's also a button on the top that says the movie. And if they click that, they go to the official movie site, and they can find the trailer and watch that. People really love the trailer. And
yeah, I love the trailer.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
It's neat. It looks like it's a really, really good production.
You know, it was a relatively low-budget movie. I mean, about $9 million, which in Hollywood is small. But it doesn't look like, there's nothing about it that looks like a low-budget movie.
No.
It looks like a big movie.
It's such a powerful message, and I think that the film will really help it get out there.
Well, it's a thrill. It's almost a miracle, really, that a book, especially, first of all, so few books end up being translated to the medium of film. And film is the number one art today, really, in terms of popularity. And it's a wonderful art because it's collaborative. It reminds us that nobody's smarter than all of us. And so they get all these creative talents together, from set design to costumes. And these guys are artists at their craft. When I drove to the movie set one night, it was just turning dark because they were doing all-night shoots at the gas station. And they had built the gas station from the ground floor up, and nobody could have driven in there and not said, please, can I, and wanted to fill up their car. Because the snacks in the snack bar and the oil sitting around on the table half opened and the cloths that clean things up are sitting there. Everything looked identical to the station pretty much that I remember in Berkeley with fog rolling over it. It was an eerie feeling. So they're all artists. They collaborate together to make something special. But to have this particular book, which has a lot of message to it, to have that translated to the screen in a way that not only will appeal to spiritual audiences, but actually mainstream kids in malls, is just an immense achievement that may be appreciated fully one day.
I think it's really been positive lately to see all the spiritual films that are coming out. And the more that come out, you start to see the production quality of these films getting better and better all the time. And I think so then the messages are going to be able to get out there more clearly.
Yeah, you know, to a whole different audience, and it's
really
time to a mass audience in a different way.
Yeah, to the masses.
And some may end up going back to read the book. I hope that's the case, too, because there's more in the book. The movie covers my college years, but the book covers considerably more, so it'll be good for everybody all the way around. You know, there have always been movies with spiritual or metaphysical content, mainstream movies, like Field of Dreams, The Natural, Phenomenon, Ghost.
Right.
We can probably think of other movies, too, that were mainstream, big Hollywood movies that did very well, but they did have those elements of either after death or extrasensory perception or healing. But more lately, when you're talking about spiritual movies, more lately there are movies that are message movies. They have a substance, content, a teaching. So you have movies like What the Bleep and Indigo and Celestine Prophecy and so on, but many of these movies are playing in limited circuits around the country, maybe in some churches, and so they'll reach people already really resonating with those messages. Not too many of those films have made the crossover and been made in such a way that they have a really good, compelling story that so a distributor picks it up and it'll get into more theaters. And that is the challenge today. So Peaceful Warrior is one of the first spiritual message movies that have made that transition, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. I think people are going to be really amazed when this movie comes out. Definitely. I just finished seeing The Celestine Prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that book a long time ago, as I read Peaceful Warrior a long time ago, and I think it's really special when you read books like these to finally see them on the screen. It's like, wow, you know. And when a really good job has been done with the film, then it just makes it all the more worthwhile. Because then it reminds you of all the messages and the good things that come out of that. So
yeah.
I think it's really exciting.
You know, something just I'd love to educate it, and something I might offer your audience is that many of us who've read a book and really liked the book a lot, we get very loyal to the book, and we expect and want the movie we judge the movie by how similar it is to the book. And what many people don't realize is when you take a book that has inner narrative, discussions of what characters are thinking, which you really can't do very well in movies, it's a different medium. It's like translating a painting to a sculpture.
Right.
It's a different medium. So if the movie is exactly like the book, it's like, what's the point? But I think movies should be somewhat different. It should offer something that in its own unique way, with visual, with pictures, and with sound. So my goal was not to have that. I'm not one of the producers of the film. I didn't really actually write the script. I contributed to it. I knew when to get out of the way and let the professionals do their thing, and they did them, I think, well. So it's not really a matter of, is it just like the book? And I'm letting people know that. But does it convey the central heart and message? You bet.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Now, Journeys of Socrates is coming out 25 years later.
Yes.
To finally share the story with your audience about who is this Socrates and where did he come from. And so, is it something that you always knew you were going to write, or has it kind of evolved over the years through people's feedback on The Peaceful Warrior, or how did it all come about?
My books, Shelley, were really an organic process. They weren't strategic. I didn't figure them out in advance. Each one called out to me, and sometimes I thought I was going to write one, and then boom, another ended up getting written. Kind of a mysterious process. It wasn't ordered and structured. I wish sometimes I'd been called to do detective stories where I had the same characters and one was similar to another in different locations, and fans would get one and they get the other because they knew it was going to be kind of similar. But mine are, each one is so different. If people go to Amazon or go to my site and read about the story behind my books, which I have written there, they'll see how each one was born. And when I wrote Way of the Peaceful Warrior, I thought that was it. I was going to write this book. And in fact, I didn't write another book for 10 years after Way of the Peaceful Warrior because I had nothing new to say after that. I find that actually refreshing. but 10 years later, I new mentors, new experiences, and suddenly I was writing a book a year. Sacred Journey came out, which takes place actually within the Way of the Peaceful Warrior story. And then No Ordinary Moments, which explains a lot of the things that I wanted to explain I couldn't do in a story, so I wrote the book No Ordinary Moments. Then The Life You Were Born to Live, The Laws of Spirit, some children's books came out, Living on Purpose, Body Mind Mastery, and it was only after 25 years, well, actually it was about 23 years when I started it, maybe 22, it came to me, you know, people had been asking me for all this time, who was this old guy? You never said about his life, or, you know, was he married? Did he have children? How did this old peaceful warrior become this wise, powerful old character? And so I said, it's time to write his story, and that's when I began.
Here's something that, you know, people ask me when I'm writing a book, like, how does it happen? And sometimes I tell them, like, it's like I see that the book's already finished, and it kind of pops into my head. So how... As these various, I mean, you've written 11 or 12 books now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you see it as finished, or do you just, how do you do that? I mean, mentally, I'm kind of curious about the creative process in people, and I think other people are interested in that as well. I mean, do you see it as a finished product, or do you kind of just feel that this is kind of what's supposed to happen, or how does it work for you?
Well, interesting you mention that. For me, I think it's probably different for each person. It may be different for each book. I have recognized certain processes I go through, certain phases. You may recognize, too, my first phase in writing a book I call the pre-procrastination phase. And then I work my way into the full-blown, you know, no longer in denial, full procrastination phase. But actually, that's a percolation, necessary phase, a percolation, just living with it, the idea for a while. And then comes the involved phase where I'm actually typing something. And then the interested phase, where I'd actually rather type than do some other things. Then, you know, goes into the immersion phase, the obsession phase, and ends with the desperation phase on deadline. So,
yes.
That's, you know, the process. And sometimes moments of depression when it's not coming together. You know, it's all part of the process. But as far as, I don't necessarily see a book completed and then have to type really fast to get it all down, though I have had that experience about certain elements, scenes, paragraphs, pages. I just get a concept. What do I want to write about? Where is it going to be? Or if it's a nonfiction book, what do I want to express here? And how will it be structured? You know, it's an indelicate way of describing it, but a very successful science fiction writer, Ray Bradbury, once said, writing consists of two phases, throwing up and cleaning up. And that's what it feels like to me. I do a lot of cleaning up afterward and structuring it and make it. I love polishing. I love editing. But I have to do the labor of putting all the words down first so I'll have something to clean up and make better.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's nice to hear these things from another writer because I think maybe I'm psychologically deranged or something. I don't know.
You're happy to write, you know.
I'm real hyperactive. I have a hard time sitting still. I feel blessed that I can write anything at all and actually get it done.
Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Because I'm hyper. But so it's interesting. It's just interesting to hear about other people's creative process. I've been studying, you know, alternate states of consciousness, and one of my books is on parallel universes, and sometimes I do wonder, you know, where do these sci-fi writers like Ray Bradbury come up with their stuff? I mean, sometimes I'm starting to think that maybe these things really do exist in other dimensions of reality or something, and we're just kind of bringing it through.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. It's certainly one viable, you know, people talk about their muse, and you wonder. I mean, you've had the experience, and I have too, and every writer has when they're writing that creative process where we go, where did that come from? Like, this is, I don't know this.
Right.
C. Day-Lewis, who is the father of the actor Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes.
C. Day-Lewis once said, I write not in order to be understood. I write in order to understand. And in the process of writing, information comes in. Things get structured. Suddenly we get insights in the process of opening up. So it is kind of mysterious. And it works as well for me as any other way to say it's in some universe somewhere, and it just kind of breaks through and pours through us if we're open to it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make, because I feel like, you know, just because I write a book about something doesn't mean I know anything about it. I feel like the more I read and learn, the more I realize I don't know anything at all. You know, there's always more to learn in this world, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Boy, have I had that experience, too, where I sometimes I'll be about to teach a seminar, and I'll go, I don't know anything. I don't know anything. What am I doing here? And then I walk out, and the words just pour out.
Yes.
Like they're doing now.
I'm only laughing because I know that feeling. Oh, my gosh. You're standing there going, looking out at the audience going, who am I, and why am I here?
Yeah. Well, if ignorance is bliss, sometimes I'd say I'm ecstatic.
Oh, yeah, that's neat. So, about the journey of Socrates, tell us about Socrates and how this relates to your family. I just thought this was so amazing. And I don't want you to spoil the surprise for anybody, but tell us about your family and how this relates to.
Well, yeah, I don't want to spoil the surprise.
If you can tell us anything about it.
Let me just say that you know, there were a number of themes in the journeys of Socrates. I mean, it takes place, for those who are listening, it takes place in Russia starting 1872, because the man I called Socrates after the ancient Greek, he just reminded me of him, and he smiled when I called him that, and I wasn't sure why. But as it turned out, his grandfather and his mother thought of him. That was one of her favorite philosophers, and his grandfather called him Little Socrates when he was a little boy. And I start with his childhood, and it goes through some things that happened to him at a military school. He lost his mother when he was born, and he had a difficult life raised in this military school, a way of life he didn't understand. But he learned survival. He learned some combat and the military arts, and he escaped. You know, a tragedy forced him to flee. And then he learned he survived in the mountains alone for quite some time before he was pulled back to St. Petersburg. There was a hidden gift, and then many adventures happened from there. But he came from Russia, and as it happens, my ancestors all came from Russia. And my grandma, Polly, really didn't like to talk about the old country. I never learned a lot from her. Until maybe later in life we had a talk, as I wrote about in the book. But in a way, the book, one of the themes is honoring those who came before us. You know, we've all gotten here where we are because somebody took a risk and took a long journey to a new land. And those are the shoulders on which we stand. They made our life possible. And so it's honoring those. And that's one way I had of doing that. And as you know, there are also themes of the search for family and the value of family. Even though you could describe the book as how a boy became a man, how a man became a warrior, and how a warrior found peace, which is so important today to break the cycles of revenge and retribution.
Absolutely.
The usual martial arts, chop sake, you know, revenge type of theme. There was something different that happened, as you know. But it's not just a guy's martial arts book, because I know women, half the letters I get are from women who love the book because of some of the heart that's in it, too. And since you liked it, that's obviously true.
I just love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, I can't say that enough. I couldn't put it down. The thing that I thought was so powerful about it that really caused me to sit down and think after I put, I mean, it's the kind of book that you can't wait to see what's happening next, but you're almost a little bit down after you finish it because you're like, darn, I didn't want that to end.
Yeah,
and it caused me to just kind of reflect for a few days on some of the things that I think you really said well in there. And the thing about, you know, I don't want to give away any of the plot, but the part of just the whole thing about we all are going to live and we are all going to die. And how we choose to spend the days in between those two moments is up to us. And regardless of what people do to us, we can choose to, like you said, we can choose revenge or we can just accept that that's what happened and we can move on and be a peaceful warrior. And it caused me to kind of get into some, I don't know, really deep philosophical thinking about that. When we're, you know, the society out here, we're so obsessed with our health and our, you know, longevity, and we're trying to, it's kind of like we're trying to beat Mother Nature or whatever. And to a certain degree, of course, we want to make our lives as peaceful and as healthy and as long as possible, but the reality is we're all going to go someday. And it caused me to kind of get into this thing where I was thinking about, don't we obsess a little bit too much about things that aren't important? Like, you know, I didn't eat dessert today or whatever, or, you know, because I was worried about a couple calories. Why don't we just enjoy our life and realize that we might as well enjoy the time that we're here?
Oh, so true. In fact,
you know, and I think all these messages are in the book, Dan. I mean, it was just great.
Well, I'm, you know, obviously I find it very gratifying that you appreciate it so much, and many people do. I get a lot of letters about it now. And like any novel, it's tough to promote novels. As an author going out, you don't go in and get a lot of media coverage for a novel. Self-help books, you know, point one, point two for living, that gets on the radio, so more people hear about a book. But it's tougher for a novel, and I think this will pick up word of mouth like Peaceful Warrior did and build over time. I didn't write the book with didactic interest in mind. In other words, Peaceful Warrior is full, every page, of reminders and lessons and so on. Whereas The Journeys of Socrates, I wanted to write a really compelling novel, but I did want to have a novel with some substance. And as you know, especially as you move through the novel and you find some of his mentors, we learn from them too, like the man Seraphim, that old monk. So, yeah, I'm glad you found a lot of substance in there, because I put it in so it's not hitting people over the head. You know what I mean?
It seemed like it just came naturally through the words.
Yeah, through the words and through the story. And I think that's what I'm interested in doing more in the future, writing stories with substance rather than just self-help books under a narrow guise of somewhat of a framework of a story. And I did write the book to lend perspective. I would hope after reading that book, you know, that the reader would see their life in a new light and not worry about the small stuff so much.
I really think that it says that in a way that was really powerful. You know, when you see a good film, we were talking about the medium of film earlier, and
yeah,
there's just some movies that are just so powerful that you just have to go sit around and think about them for a couple of days. And I think this book is like that, too, and I hope that this turns into a movie one of these days.
Oh, the producers of the Peaceful Warrior film are already after me, so...
Well, let them get after you, Dan, because I really would love to see this go on the film.
Yeah, eventually. I'm interested in doing the sequel to Peaceful Warrior next.
Oh, right.
So the rest of the story, the death and rebirth.
Would you do, like, Sacred Journey of the Peaceful Warrior next? Or?
Well, I don't know that that's going to lend itself to a movie as much, but there may be elements of Sacred Journey that will be woven into the story, and then we'll complete the rest of Peaceful Warrior, because that wasn't covered in the original movie, the ending that death and rebirth and the spiritual search. So we'll see what happens. It's still up in the air at this point in time.
It's all out there in the universe.
You know, I might, I don't, we can, we might do this later, but there's a little epigraph from Socrates' journal about 10 lines that at some point you remind me, I'll read, relate to your listeners.
Oh, good.
Later on.
Okay, good. I'll remind you of that, man. You're listening to Beyond Reality. I'm Shelley Kerr, and I'm talking to Dan Millman. You can visit Dan online at danmillman.com or peacefulwarrior.com. So, Dan, I want to shift gears for just a minute.
Sure.
Something that I'm really interested in is numerology. And I know that you wrote the book, The Life You Were Born to Live, and I was wondering if you could talk about that. You were trained by a man in that book, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about it and about some of your thoughts on numerology.
Sure, I'd love to. Let me give some context first.
Okay.
Because I mentioned earlier that my books are each is so different from the others. It has a different purpose for being written. That someone, you know, that we've all heard the old, you know, the old proverb about the six blind men who came upon an elephant, you know. In case any listeners haven't heard it, one blind person comes and holds the elephant's tail, another reaches around his leg, another holds an ear, another touches his trunk, and each of them have a very different experience of what an elephant is. One thinks it's like a rope, one like a hose, you know, one like a tree trunk, and so on. And my books are like that. If someone comes across The Life You Were Born to Live, they think, oh, Dan Millman, it must be a numerologist. And if someone reads Way of the Peaceful Warrior, they go, oh, no, this is a whole different thing. And if they read No Ordinary Moments, it's another impression. If they read Sacred Journey, oh, he's a kahuna. You know, he talks about the Hawaiian teachings. Each of those books serve a different purpose. And The Life You Were Born to Live, it came some years ago when I met a more recent mentor. I call him the warrior priest. I'm actually going to be working on a book just a couple of weeks. I'm starting a book about my search for spirit, the true story behind the story of Peaceful Warrior, and about the other mentors I met in the intervening years and how they influenced my life. So I'm going to go into detail about where that material came from. But The Life You Were Born to Live uses a very simple, straightforward, but unusually accurate interpretation of birth date and the numbers to give valid, reliable, accurate information about people's lives, the core issues of their life, one kind of life purpose that they're working on. And it's very clear. I mean, even people who have studied numerology for years refer to the book because different numerology texts express different interpretations of what all this means.
Right.
Now, I couldn't begin to explain in any rational way how adding up the numbers of your date of birth on the Gregorian calendar, not to mention, you know, the Chinese or Aztec or Hebrew or Mayan calendars, but on the Gregorian calendar, using that calendar, adding up those numbers, how that could possibly give valid, reliable, accurate information about people's lives. But thousands and hundreds of thousands, almost a million people who've read the book, probably more than that actually now, have been astonished by how accurate it is. That's why people think, you know, they think it's going to be a party game. They open the book and they go, oh, okay, what's it going to say about me? And then they go, whoa, this is almost scary. And that was because this teacher had come across a very accurate interpretation. What I learned from him in a series of lectures years ago was only 20 pages of information, small pages. I had a small notebook and I just took down 20 pages of notes about the basics, the interpretation of the numbers. And then I started working with people immediately, with friends and relatives, anybody who listened to me, reading the notes. And pretty soon I didn't need the notes anymore. I'd internalized the information, and my intuitive sight began to expand working with the system. And so I finally wrote the book after doing readings for thousands of people and teaching health professionals several trainings to do the system. I decided it was time to write the book. Now anybody can access the same thing that I learned and learn not just about our own lives, but about our parents, which can be fascinating. It's knowing them in a different way than we have before. Our children, our friends, people at work. And it's about having more compassion for ourselves and other people, realizing we all have a mountain to climb. We all have hidden strengths we may not appreciate and hurdles we're here to overcome.
Wow. And do you believe that there's, yes, there's a life purpose. Do you believe that aligns with like a soul purpose, like something that the person's done over and over again? I mean, I don't know. Do you believe that we've lived before?
You know, I don't actually share my beliefs that much, and I'll tell you why. Because
okay.
My beliefs are not any more significant than yours or anybody else's. To me, I like to speak of spiritual law, universal principles that are consistent, and that's on which I found my life and my teaching, not simply on my opinions or beliefs. Because why should I, you know, why would I lay those on somebody? Their own beliefs are, I respect those. I don't need to lay my beliefs on them. So, you know, whether I believe there's God or life after death, to me, I only know my own experience. And so whether, I know some numerological systems have soul purpose and life purpose and romantic purpose, and it gets very complicated adding up the numbers, turning your name into numbers, and doing all these things. And I've just stuck with what I think is valid and holds true. So we just dealt with this particular karmic purpose, the mountain we're here to climb. And there are 37 different life paths for people born in the 1900s, at least. And if somebody fits into one of those life paths, it doesn't mean they're going to be identical to, you know, a million other people who fit into that life path, because each of us has genetic heritage, life experience. So each of us is unique. If I pointed to a tree outside somewhere, chances are there's not a single tree on the planet exactly like that tree, with the angle of every leaf and stem and branch.
Right.
And yet I can say things that do apply reliably to redwood trees that don't apply to aspens or birches or oaks. So what I'm doing is I'm reading a pattern. So if someone falls into one of those 37 life paths, they are going to be working that pattern. But the lives can look very different. For example, Albert Schweitzer, Mother Teresa, and Adolf Hitler all work in the same life path, one of those 37. But Hitler was working his qualities in a very negative, destructive sense. Whereas Mother Teresa and Albert Schweitzer were working it in a much more positive way. So my life path, I hope I'm doing good work and positive work in the world. But there's another guy you've heard of working the same life path. His name is Osama bin Laden. So, again, it's not a matter of a good or bad life path. It's a matter of, is it being worked in the positive or negative? And in the book, in The Life You Were Born to Live, I, of course, have a paragraph, what it looks like if you're working your life in the positive in this life path, what it looks like if you're working in the negative. And many of us can recognize little bits of both.
Right. Because I guess it's whether people choose to express the shadow or express the lighter side of the nature.
Yeah, exactly. Can be used in positive, like creative energy. Creative energy can be used in positive or negative. There are people who make works of art with creativity, solve problems for the world. Other people create computer viruses.
Right.
It's all creative energy, but it's how we express it.
That's it. Well, I can definitely say you're making a difference in the world, Dan.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
So talk to us again about your book where you discuss your travels and adventures in Hawaii and Sacred Journey. When did you said you were, I think you were there, a few months traveling around Hawaii?
Yeah, that happens within the context of Way of the Peaceful Warrior. In that first novel, there was a time where Socrates says it's time for you to learn from experience. You know, he wanted to wean me from him. And so I kind of got exiled, banished, and he said it's time for you to go seek in the world. So I definitely dove into life experience. And there was a point at which I started traveling, and I did a lot of travels. And one of the first stops on my travels, since I live in California, I was heading that direction. I went to Hawaii to study with some Qigong people and also learn something about the kahuna, the huna wisdom. The kahunas are the masters of the huna way. And they have some very sophisticated information, much more so than Freud had, for example. Freud, it would be hard for me to believe that Freud and Maslow and some other giants of psychology didn't get exposed to some of these teachings, because the Huna teaching is a three selves, which helps explain so much about who we are and how we work. That's what I wanted to describe. And in the book, I was originally going to call Sacred Journey, I was just going to call it Awakening, the Three Selves. I expected it to be like a 60-page booklet. But then it just started growing as I worked on it. And I said, well, I'll talk about Mama Chia, this Huna I meet, and how I met her, the mysteries of finding my way to her, and what happened on that island of Molokai.
Molokai is neat.
Yeah.
That is a really interesting island there.
Well, that's where the leper colony is. That's where Father Damien tended to the lepers, and I said, it has to be there. It has to be on that island, you know, in the rainforest. And so, you see, people ask me often how much of my books are true, my narrative type of books. And there's so much illusion in the New Age that people don't really discern clearly. They don't really sort between reality and illusion very well, and I don't intend to add to that illusion. So I've been very careful, conscientious about saying how much is true and how much isn't. And at my website, I answer questions and answers. I have a section there. And at Amazon.com, for example, I write something about each book before people, you know, when they go to that to look up the book. So Peaceful Warrior is based on a biographical material, a structure mm-hmm. of my life. That's how the book was structured. And many of the things happen exactly as I describe them. But there are also some elements of imagination and changes of chronology and so on that I weave into that story. But Socrates was a real old guy, flesh and blood old man I met in that about 3 a.m. in that gas station. However, in Sacred Journey, Mama Chia is really a composite of the different women I've met and I'm still meeting, actually, mysteriously. So she was not an actual person. She was a composite, and it is. I tell people to treat it as a novel with a lot of truth in it. You know, it's been said that art is a lie that helps us see the truth.
Yes, that whole thing, the truth is stranger than fiction. I think I read it was Tom Clancy who said that he thinks that fiction is truth and nonfiction is maybe untrue in some
well,
way.
Well, I often tell people Socrates is real, but Dan Millman is a fictional character.
Yes, that's good.
So I wanted to be clear. Anyway, that's where Sacred Journey came from, and it shares the wisdom of the Huna. Now, Mama Chia was not just the Huna, because, remember, she took me through an experience where I understood viscerally. I had this vision where
mm-hmm.
I viscerally experienced the chakras, the different energy centers in the body.
Right.
And the Huna teaching doesn't have that. It's not part of the Huna teaching. But she, since you've read The Journeys of Socrates, and you may remember I mentioned that Sergei meets a group of masters at the rooftop of the world in the Pamir. I didn't say much about it in that book. It would have gotten too long. I may do a future book. But one of those masters was named Chia. And she was a young woman then. And so she was exposed to much more than the Huna teaching. She had transcended the particular tradition, embraced it, then transcended it. Those are the kind of teachers I love who aren't locked into just one tradition, but who've explored others and have perspective.
Oh, definitely. So when you did your children's books, you had your daughters were young. You have 3 daughters.
Yes, I do.
Right? So your daughters were young then. Did you write those books for them, or did you write them for everyone? Or?
Well, of course I wrote them for everyone, but it was really fun reading it to them as it was developing. One is called Secret of the Peaceful Warrior. One is called Quest for the Crystal Castle. And they were the right age for it when I wrote the books, and I actually went to their school and read it to their schoolmates. And ask for feedback, because that was my audience. And many adults write children's books that are way over kids' heads.
Right.
But they're not really interested in. So I wanted to get what they liked. And boy, they told me what they liked, what they didn't like as much. And that helped shape the story so I could really reach out to that age group. And The Secret of the Peaceful Warrior actually was given a Benjamin Franklin Award. And it was one of the 6 books recommended back during the Gulf War to help children understand conflict resolution. And parents love to read it because it gives... See, it's about a little boy who learns to deal with fear in the form of a really scary bully who is threatening to beat him up. And a young Danny, you know, it's a scaled-down version of Peaceful Warrior in a way. And young Danny learns from a soul guy who lives nearby, grandfather of his friend Joy, and his name is Socrates, the old guy. And he teaches Dan not to run. And not to fight, but he teaches them the secret of the peaceful warrior. So that's how the story resolves. Later on, you find out how they reach kind of a reconciliation. And I think it's kind of touching. I get tears in my eyes still reading it, which is weird for the author, but I do.
It's a really good message. I mean, and you've done such a good job of bringing it in all of the books and to the audience in which it was intended. And I definitely think That is a really powerful message for young people to have.
Oh, yeah.
Because even I had a bully that used to bully me.
Yeah.
You don't always think of women having bullies, but I think a lot of people have that go on when they were a kid, you know.
And some of the most gentle souls, you know, they get bullied people, or anybody who's a little different gets picked on, somebody just, you know, looks at you and says, oh, this is somebody I can dominate, whether it's verbally or physically.
Right.
You know, so that's why what all my seminars are about is to help people to have a peaceful heart but a warrior spirit and know when to reconcile and flow and be open and vulnerable and surrender, and when to stand up inside of ourselves and draw our boundaries and say enough, because we have to show ourselves respect as well. You know, Hillel said it so well. He said, if I am not for me, who will be? But if I am only for me, who am I? And if not now, when? I thought that covered so much territory.
Wow. Yeah, that really does.
Yeah.
So, what things will you be up to in the coming months?
Lots of exciting things. I feel as if you can imagine we're in a raft together and we're floating down the Colorado River. And intellectually, I know that up around that bend somewhere, there's some white water, there's some rapids. And even though I know it intellectually, it's not real, you know, the water is nice and smooth, a beautiful, powerful current. I'm looking around and I see up ahead a few ripples. That's how I feel right now at this point in my life. Because with the movie coming toward a release, even though I'm not one of the producers, I'm not on their payroll or anything, I'm just the author of the book, it's an exciting thing. So I'm going for the ride. I'm having a great time and I'm helping. I'm their cheerleader. I'm helping wherever I can, because I believe in the movie. You know, when Joy and I sat alone in the screening room some months ago, and they didn't want anybody else in there, not in the producers, nobody, just Joy and me. We're sitting there, and this movie came on the screen, and many times tears filled my eyes. Just
I'm sure.
25 years unfolding, and to actually see this thing that people spent millions of dollars to do, to make my book like that, with wonderful actors who are all dedicated. I mean, the director himself said he went through a very dark time some years ago, and he said the book not only changed his life, but probably saved it. And that was the guy directing the picture. Victor Salva is his name. He actually wrote and directed a movie called Powder. Do you remember that movie?
No.
Yeah, it's quite a spiritual film in its own right. He actually is known.
Oh, wait, Powder?
About that real.
Isn't that about the albino?
Yeah.
The white.
Yes.
Skinned
yeah.
boy.
Yeah, he was so different, and he
yes.
Power, but he had these electrical powers.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. See, Victor is known today to horror movies. He does Jeepers Creepers and all that. so he's very good at atmosphere and noir dark movies. But yeah, he did Powder, and this one is going to be a movie he said he'll remember the rest of his life.
Wow, I haven't seen Jeepers Creepers, but I know of it.
Yeah, I haven't either, actually. But
Powder was a really cool movie.
Yeah, well, his heart was really in this, and so were the actors.
The
promotion,
so
you know, the actors, Nick Nolte and the others, the promotion they're doing, we're going to meet and be in the various cities in California when it opens up. We'll be in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, and Phoenix on June 2nd. That's when everything starts up. That's when it opens. We hope a lot of people will come to the different theaters. But then it's going to roll east from there, a second wave of cities, and then a third wave all on the East Coast, up and down, and many cities. And it's almost like, you know, many people don't know this, but movies that are independent films will often start in only a few theaters.
Right.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding started in just a couple of theaters.
Right.
Million Dollar Baby started in 20 theaters.
Capote.
Mars and Penguins started just a few theaters. So, but
yeah.
If they catch on, if people tell friends about it, then it expands and it's shown more and more places.
Wow, that is so exciting. That must have been such a thrill to see your work up on the screen. I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was surreal, actually, because it's not just my work. I mean, any author who's written a detective story, you know, written one of those or another story, they see it up on the screen, but the strange part is the story happens to be autobiographical, so the character in the movie is named Dan Millman.
Wow!
So it gets even more strange when I go, wait a minute, and I'm seeing things happening to my alter ego, so to speak.
That is so neat.
It's an odd thing, yeah.
You're listening to Beyond Reality on BBS Radio. I'm Shelley Kerr, and I'm talking to Dan Millman. You can visit Dan online at danmillman.com or peacefulwarrior.com. Dan, we've got just a couple more minutes left, and I was wondering if you would share the epitaph from Socrates.
Oh, yes, I'd love
to. That you promised to share with us.
Yeah, I think many of your listeners will relate to this, and this is his yeah, okay. He wrote in his journal, "When I was young, I believed that life might unfold in an orderly way, according to my hopes and expectations. But now I understand that the way winds like a river, always changing, ever onward, following God's gravity toward the great sea of being. My journeys revealed that the way itself creates the warrior, and that every path ultimately leads to peace, and every choice to wisdom, and that life has always been and will always be arising in mystery."
Wow. Wow. I just want to tell people again, I cannot recommend this enough. This is one of the best books I have read in years, and I definitely want people to go out and pick up a copy of The Journeys of Socrates by Dan Millman. Dan, any closing thoughts?
Well,
before we say,
if people haven't read Peaceful Warrior, people ask me, which should I read first? I don't think it matters.
No,
it really
I don't think so either.
It doesn't matter which book you read first. It'll be a different experience either way. But the movie edition of Way of the Peaceful Warrior is also coming out in just a few weeks. A new cover, and it has an interview with me about the making of the movie. And it's really just kind of a beautiful cover, very unusual, like the website. Kind of. So.
And you've added a new afterword in that one.
Yes, also.
With a little of the biography of the evolution of the project, I think.
Exactly.
Great. So when will that one be out?
It should be out in just a couple of weeks. It should be available in stores.
Okay, great.
The movie edition, yeah. Well, hey, it's been just such a pleasure speaking with you.
It's been great, Dan, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. Is Joy going to be in Santa Fe this weekend also? Or
no, she's actually going to be visiting my daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, I will look forward to seeing you in Santa Fe this weekend at the conference. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Beyond Reality. I'm Dr. Shelley Kerr. You can visit me online at www.galactichealing.org or at beyondrealityshow.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, have a blessed day.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.